Okay. But now we get to the real action, which is this business of Kalev Achsa and Otni Il. I have a lot of my notes on the different boundaries that we have here, but I think we agreed when we started on this section of Yoshua that we were going to go easy on the maps. So let's see the fascinating story of Kalev and his daughter Achsa and the gentleman she marries. So jump to Pasuk Yud-Gimel, sentence 13. Ulekalev ben Yefune nasan chelek besoch bnei Yehuda el pi Hashem li Hoshua es kiryas arba avi ha'anak hi chevron. So the pasuk says that to Kalev ben Yefune he gave a portion in the tribe of Yehuda. Right? We already talked about how Kalev asked for this in the 14th parak. So a portion is given to is given to Kalev as God tells Yehoshua. Kiryat Arba is the area that is Chevron. And again, we said it's really the area outside Chevron. Vayoresh Misham Kalev Eshlosha Bnei Ha'anak. And Kalev gets rid of the three sons of the giant, Sheshai, Achiman, Talmai, Yilidei Ha'anak, the product of the giant. Vayal Misham El Yoshvei Devir. And then he, Kalev, went up to the residence of Devir. Vishem Devir Lefanim, Kiryat Sefer. And Devir, before that, was named Kiryat Sefer. Vayomer Kalev, and Kalev declared, Asher Yakez Kiryat Sefer Ulchada, whoever conquers Kiryat Sefer, Vanasati Loas Achsa Vitili Isha, I'm going to give him my daughter Achsa as a wife. Vayel Kedo Osniel ben Knaz Achi Kalev. Well, Kalev has a brother, Osniel ben Knaz, and Osniel goes and conquers the city. Vayitin Loas Achsa Vitali Isha, and he says, okay, you get to marry Achsa. Vayi Bevoa, and it was, she came along. And she pushed or persuaded Osniel to ask her father for a field. And she jumped off of the donkey. Right? Sanchanim, skydivers, the paratroopers. So she jumps off of the donkey. No parachute needed, presumably. And Kalev says, what's up? Vatomer, and she said, Tanali Bracha, give me a Bracha. Bracha often means blessing, but the basic meaning of Bracha, as I understand it, is a gift. It comes up in different contexts. So she says, give me a gift. Ki Eretz HaNegev Nisatani, because you gave me this dry land, the land of the south, dry land that we talked about in Negev and south before. V'nasatali Gulos Mayim, give me sources of water. And he gave her as gulos ilios, ves gulos tachtios, upper and lower sources of water. Did that story make any sense to you? Did that follow? Did that scan? There's a whole lot here that we have to understand. Right, let's go back to the beginning of the story. He gives Kalev Chevron. Right, we remember that we read that in Perek Yedaleh. Right, what did Kalev say when he got Chevron? Remember his speech.
Yeah, he's still as strong and mighty as he
was. Yeah, I'm a mighty man. Right, I'm just as strong now as I was back in the day. Excuse me, I have this thing called Devir. If anybody could help conquer it, you know, you get to marry my daughter. What happened? What happened to the big mighty man who, you know, defeated three giants? The offspring of the giants, mind you. Maybe they're smaller. But that's number one. That's one thing I don't understand. What else is very difficult to understand here?
Why is she asking her husband to ask her father?
Mm-hmm. Not to mention, did her husband end up asking the father?
No, she
did it. Right? She pushed him, and then she went and made the request.
Yeah.
That's another one. What else?
Significance of her jumping off the donkey.
Well, that's, I think she's as strong as Kalev was back then. But what else?
If they gave her the dry lands, how are they going to get the water from where it was, even though he gave her water?
Right. It has to be that this water that he's providing is somewhere in town.
Right.
Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
But what else? Go back towards the beginning of the story. Not the beginning of the chapter, but the beginning of the story. I'm not the only one here who has daughters. Does anyone not think this is strange that you promised your daughter to some unknown, without asking her, but without even knowing who you're talking about? I mean, who's going to come along and conquer the city? Right? So you get some guy who comes out of the bar, right? Flexes his muscles, conquers Devere, and says, give me your daughter. I mean, this is Kalev we're talking about, right? Kalev, big tzaddik, one of the two Meraglim who was nice and good and served Hashem, and now he just promised his daughter to the unknown warrior who's going to conquer a city. That doesn't strike you a little strange?
Common fairy tale.
Yes, precisely. Not to mention, this name is kind of funny. The name of the city. No, not Achsa. Achsa's name we're going to come back to. But the name of the city is what?
Kiryat Sefer?
Right. It's Devere now, and it used to be Kiryat Sefer. Kiryat Sefer is a very interesting name. Right? City of the Book. Right? City of the Book. Why, first of all, what caused a town in ancient Canaan to have the name Kiryat Sefer? This wasn't our name for it. This is the name before we got there. The Canaanim called this city Kiryat Sefer. And why are you listing that name here? You're never again going to do it. It's only Devere from here on out. Mm-hmm. So what's the business of Kiryat Sefer? It's especially interesting, if you take a look at the sheet, in light of something that I found in an article in the journal Megadim. Rabbi Yisrael Rosen wrote this. He passed away just last year. So he says in source number 4, Nagdimu Nitzayin. He says, first of all, we have to note something. Kibaparak Aleph Beshoftim. He's commenting, actually, I should note this. This story appears here, and then it shows up again in the first chapter in Shoftim. First two chapters of Shoftim give a recap of conquests. Unclear whether this story really belongs in Shoftim or really belongs here. That's not so clear cut, but for our purposes it doesn't matter. But he says, we're dealing with the first chapter in Shoftim. Meforat kibushan shel arba arim. That chapter details the conquest of 4 cities. This is one of those things where which one of these is not like the other. Jerusalem, Hebron, Devere, Beit El. Devere is the standout. What is common to Yerushalayim, Hebron, and Beit El?
Holy places.
Well, you see, I mean, he calls them traditional network of holy cities. Those are all places where Abraham built them. Yerushalayim is its own thing. What Abraham was connected to Yerushalayim, Har HaMoriah is in Yerushalayim. These are cities of standing. And Devere is stuck into this set. So Devere has to be a special, special place. In fact, the word Devere, not because of the city necessarily, but the word Devere would come to mean the Kodesh Kadashim in the Beis HaMikdash. The Holy of Holies is the Devere. So not only that, take a look at source number 5. Commenting on a pasuk later in our chapter, which is going to say, V'dana v'kiryat sana hi Devere. Okay, this is a medrash in the Sifri. This one pasuk says, Dana and Kiryat Sefer, which is Devere, and then it also says, though, closer to where we are now in Yoshua, V'shem Devere lefanim Kiryat Sefer. The name of Devere earlier was Kiryat Sefer. So, the medrash says, Nimtzeis kriya shlosh hashemos. That means that Devere has 3 names. You've got Kiryat Sana, Kiryat Sefer, and Devere. So the Medrash asks, why did people need 3 different names for the city? And the answer is, like in Israel, it got conquered many times. Elisha, like everywhere else, Elisha, Yushalosh, Malchus, Miskachos, Alad, there were 3 different empires that clashed for this city. Zuomeres Tikari Al Shmi, Zuomeres Tikari Al Shmi, each one says, name it for us. We had a name for it. Valotvam Kalvachomer. In Psolas Ara Yisrael, Arba Malchios Miskachos Aleha, Kalvachomer Leshivcha Shal Eretz Yisrael. He says that the lowest of Israeli cities, lowest in terms of quality of land perhaps, they are all fighting for it. How much more so when you're dealing with the best? the now it says four kingdoms here. It really means three kingdoms. The reason it says four, I think, is because the previous part of the Medrash talks about a similar issue with Har Hermon. How Mount Hermon has four names and it's from four kingdoms. So I think that's where you got four here. I wouldn't get hung up on the four. But the point is that this is a special city. This is not just a nothing place. This Devir / Kiryat Sefer had standing. So what do we make of this? What do we make about Kalev needing to bring somebody else in? What do we make of deciding that his daughter is going to marry this player to be named later? The and what's with the request for water? All of this is really strange. So there's a side note which I'm not going to get into now, but I noted it for you in number six, which is the question of so when did this happen that I alluded to already. Rashi takes the view that that the story really happens later, after Yoshua dies. That's Rashi's take. And the only reason it's mentioned here is because it figures into the description of the division of the land.
The story with Kalev and his daughter.
Yeah. Bar Benel, though, and Malvim disagree and say, no, it happens here in Yoshua's lifetime. It happened, and it's only reported in Shoftim because it's part of Yehuda's conquest. Fine. But what I want to show you is that there are two distinct ways you can read this story of Kalev, Achsa, and Othniel ben Kenaz. And you just have to follow the line that you choose consistently, and then the different elements will play out in a way that is consistent with that theme. If you take a look at the table I gave you in number 7, on the one hand, I feel giving you a table is a bad idea because it gives everything away. But on the other hand, it's the only way that this is going to actually be coherent. So I sacrifice the power of surprise for clarity. So as you see in the two columns, one view is that what happens here is an actual physical conquest of the city. And within that view, Kalev needs help, as I wrote here, either because he got old, or because he's being punished for something, which we're going to have to explain. Within this line, I don't know why the city was called Kiryat Sefer. I have no particular explanation. Why did he give away Achsa like this? Either because he's foolish, and you'll see what I mean, or because he has emunah, he believes Hashem is going to help. Within this view, she gets dry land and she needs actual water. There's no metaphor here, there's no imagery, like that's the actual story. And Achsa is, well, we'll see, the Gemara is going to talk about her beauty, it's understood as literal. All of this is physical, the whole story is physical. And the Yavetz thing won't make any sense yet, we're not there yet. That's all one way to look at this story. It's a physical conquest. Achsa is going to marry the guy who conquers it, and so on. The other way to take it, though, is that this is not talking about conquering a city at all. It's conquering a book. Kiryat Sefer, the city of the book. The book for Jews being Torah. And what this is about is Torah study and a scholar. Kalev needs help in terms of Torah, not in terms of conquering the city. So his whole line about how strong he is has nothing to do with anything. The strength is irrelevant. He wants to conquer the city of Torah, so to speak. And he says, whoever can accomplish this Torah gets to marry my daughter. So now we understand a little better what he's doing with this marriage. Meaning he's not saying my daughter can marry some guy from a bar who's able to defeat the city. I don't know why I assume strong people hang out in bars. Guy from the gym who can conquer the city. But rather, it's I'm going to marry off my daughter to the Talmid Chacham who can resolve the questions and problems that we have. Mind you, I still believe that they should see each other. And that, she should agree and so on. But that's it makes it a little bit more palatable in terms of what his criteria are for a good son-in-law. So he gives away Achsa to somebody who is, in fact, a worthy husband. And then the business of what it was that Achsa wanted plays out from there. When Achsa wants resources, it is either she is asking for Torah, or she's asking for support for her husband's Torah. We're going to get to the business about beauty and avates. We're not there yet. But that's the basic idea of how this is, of the two ways you can read this narrative, and you just have to be consistent. So we're going to first take it in terms of physical conquest. Let's take it that way first.
Yeah. Why are we even taking it in the parable way of Torah? Why? Because of all these problems.
Because of all these problems. Yeah, because we have problems. Yeah. Sorry, Lou, you were going to say?
I was just going to say, so how does water relate to supporting Torah and supporting desire?
Okay, so we'll get to it.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll see all these play out, and I expect it'll be clear. If not, you know, ask me once we've seen it. But in terms of physical conquest, so in terms of, first of all, of Kalev's need for assistance, Abarbanel says, look, he's 85 years old. 85 plus, if you put this in Shoftim, right after Yeshua has died, now he's even older. He could be past the century mark, for all we know. That's one way to take it. The other way to take it, though, is fascinating. Rabbi Rosen notes in source number 8, again in that same article from Megadim, that there was a medrash found in the Cairo Geniza. And it addresses what we talked about a few weeks ago. You remember when Kalev made his statement about how strong he is, we were kind of taken aback. Like, is that the sort of thing that one of the heroes in Tanakh does? That's another plug for heroes and villains. So so take a look at source number 8. Look what our Rosen says. He says, "Pianuach hanosei matzui b'midrash hachamim shenechsaf beginzei shechter aleph." He says the explanation of this is found in a medrash that was only discovered in the Ginzei Shechter, which is the Cairo Geniza.
When was the Cairo Geniza
found? It's now about 140 years ago. Yeah, it's the end of the 19th century, but that wasn't when it was all deciphered, whatever. That's still ongoing. But that was when they first found it.
There's a great website that has these. It's very cool. They have different scientific tasks that you can sign up for. So one of the things they were doing, I was doing it a number of months ago, they would show you a piece, a scrap from the Geniza, and you had to mark whether it was Hebrew, Arabic, and then a few other things they would ask you to do. So this way, they had the public helping them go through thousands of little scraps of
wow.
paper. And it was very interesting.
Yeah, fascinating.
You don't know what they say unless you can read some of it. But,
right.
It's almost like touching it yourself. It
That's very cool. Yeah. You can look, if you look online, the Friedberg Geniza Project. Friedberg is in the Toronto Friedberg. So you can actually look at things that have already, that are always already cataloged from the Cairo Geniza, including like the Rambam's handwriting, stuff like that. It's there's remarkable stuff there. Shopping list. The Friedberg Geniza Project. So how does this medrash go? What does it say? Nishtabach Kalev Bikocho. V'nag abo ayin hara v'hir gishba. Kalev praised himself for his strength. He was struck by ayin hara. Ayin hara, in its simplest sense, you expose yourself to the jealousy of others. I'm not going through that whole shir that we were at last week, Fred. You cause other people to say, why does this person deserve that? And to appeal to Hashem, why does this person have it? That's a basic understanding of Ayin Hara. So he is affected by that. Amosai, when do we see that it affected him? B'shash Amar, Deni Hayom Chazak, Kasher B'yom Shalach Hasi Moshe, Kekochi Az, Kochi Me'ata, I gave you the pasuk. He says, I'm as strong as I was when Moshe sent me, I'm just as strong now as I was then, I can go to war. Naga bo Ayin Hara, so Ayin Hara struck him, Shenamar, as the pasuk says, Vayomer Kalei, Vashia Kes Kiryat Sefer, he needs to go find somebody else to help him with Kiryat Sefer, because he becomes infirm. Okay, Rabbi Rosen has an interesting idea here. He also notes that in the version of this story that appears in the third chapter in Shoftim, Asniel is described not just as the brother of Kalev, but the brother of Kalev, Hakatan Mimenu, who is smaller than him. And now Kalev needs to turn to him for help. Right? The older brother never wants to be in that position, but it happens over time. So this doesn't explain the Kiryat Sefer name. The Kiryat Sefer name is not addressed by this perspective. But according to this, Kalev promises his daughter to a warrior. And what's interesting is source number 9. The Gemara in Tanis talks about three people who basically gambled. They asked for something, shalok gehogen, inappropriately. L'shnayim heshivuhu kahogen, two received a proper answer, meaning even though they were playing a dangerous game, God didn't call them on it. And then the third, l'echad heshivu shelo kahogen, the third one did something wrong, and therefore he got an improper answer. What do you mean? Ve'eluhin, Eliezer eved Avram. Right? Eliezer gambled. Eliezer gets to the well, and he says, whoever comes out and says, I'm going to give you, and also I'm going to give your camels, that's the one God has chosen. What's wrong with Eliezer doing that? Everyone talks about that so beautifully and says, look, chesed is so important, and so on. What's wrong with Eliezer's gamble?
No idea.
Well, not just that. Eliezer has a job. What was Eliezer's job?
To find someone from the family.
Right, to find someone from the family. Your job wasn't to find the girl you think is appropriate based on the traits that you've decided matter. What if this girl who comes out is not from the family? Good job, Eliezer. Give all the bracelets away. So Eliezer is one. But God doesn't call him on it. God sends him Rivka from the house of Nahor. The second one, Shaul ben Kish. Shaul also has a gamble. That's its own story. We're not going to go into that right now.
Shaul
HaMelech, correct. And Yiftach, the famous story with Yiftach's daughter. Right? Whatever comes out of the house first, I'm going to bring as a korban to Hashem. Good idea. That made a lot of sense, Yiftach. Because, of course, everyone keeps cows and sheep and goats in the house and naturally expect that to come out first. So Yiftach and his daughter get burnt when he asks inappropriately. So what's interesting is that Kalev isn't on the list. Because Kalev also gambled. Who knows who's going to conquer this city? There's a medrash that actually does have Kalev on the list. The medrash in Bereishis Rabbah in Perek Samach Siv Gimel. There you have it. But generally speaking, it's not on the list. Tosfos here makes a point of it. So why isn't Kalev on this list? So Rabbi Rosen suggests that you have to understand what a goral, what a lottery is about. And this goes back to our discussion about giving out the land.
Yeah.
The goal of a lottery was to demonstrate faith in God. Whatever happens, God is the one who is engineering it. So it's a statement of faith. Now, you could look at it as a bad thing, because you're testing God. Mm-hmm. But also as a positive thing, an expression of faith. So maybe that's the way we should look at it. Alternatively, the Sfas Emes has a different answer. The answer of the Sfas Emes is fascinating. You're familiar with the Gemara in the beginning of Sota. That's the one that says that 40 days before someone is born, right, the voice comes out and declares, daughter of so-and-so is going to marry so-and-so, right? You've heard this idea? No? Oh, boy. So that's where the idea of Bashert comes from. The idea that it's already been arranged, God already said who's going to marry whom. Now you just have to find the one who God said you were going to marry. You know, people are also given free will. They can not listen to the voice. But that's the idea that the Gemara in Sota brings. But then the Gemara plays it out and ends up saying, actually, depends if it's the first marriage or the second marriage. The first marriage is preordained. Second marriage, then it's about how good a person you are. If you're a better person, you get a better match. If you're not so good, then not so good match. That's the Gemara in Sota. I leave it to you to apply this to all the people you know. Good luck. But the point here, says the Sfas Emes, is if this is a first marriage for Kalev's daughter, so then it's all from Shemayim anyway. It's all been foreordained. And if it's a second marriage, then it'll be based on her merits. So is there somebody good? It'll be somebody good. That's the Sfas Emes' idea. Also, this is a matter of faith. That's all. Yeah. But James. Okay.
Yeah.
Good luck. According to this read, what Asa is looking for now is resources. Literal, the whole thing. Read it as a physical story. So Radak says in source number 10, the way to read the story of her asking her husband and then asking and all of that, Radak says, Hisisa bala lishol me'es avi ha'sadeh. She persuades her husband to ask her father for a field. But she didn't succeed. He didn't want to ask. He says, well, I don't want to ask my father-in-law for a field. That's uncomfortable. Uksharasa came, so she saw that. Batitznach me'alachamor. So she, batitznach, from the donkey. Klomar hipila atzma me'alachamor. She cast herself from the donkey that she was riding on, and she said, well, fine, I'm going to ask Dad. That's the idea as Radak sees it play out. And then, alternatively, Mitzvah David says she persuaded her husband to permit her to be the one to ask for it from the father. And then she asks for water as well. This also fits source number 12. Source number 12 is the one about beauty. Gemara in Temura. V'lama nikra shma Achsa. Why is her name Achsa? Achsa is not a word that we know so well. Shekol haroa osa ko'es. Right? You're transposing letters. Anyone who saw her would be ko'es, would be angry, alishto, at his wife. Meaning, Achsa was just extremely beautiful, and that's why Rashi explains it here. So beautiful that it would cause problems for other marriages. So that's reading all of this on physical lines, physical material lines. The other way to read it, though, which will resolve more of the questions, is to read it in a spiritual way. First of all, it's a spiritual conquest of Sefer, of Torah. And that's why Kalev, as strong as he may be, wants help. Take a look at source number 13, the Gemara in Temura. Am Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Rav Yehuda says, quoting Rav, Bishah Shanifter Moshe Rabbeinu Legan Eden, when Moshe passed on, Amar lo Yoshua, he said to Yoshua before he died, Sha'al mi meni kosfeko shiyeshlach, ask me any uncertainties you have. If there's anything that you ever wanted to know about Torah, now's your opportunity. Amar lo, so he says back, Rebbe, my master, did I ever leave you for a single moment? Lo kach kasavtabi, didn't you write about me? Right? He read the Torah. The Torah says that I never left the tent. I guess I never left the tent. It must be very creepy to read about yourself in the Chumash like that. Miyad tashash kochol shel Yoshua. But at that point, Yoshua's strength dissipated, right? Because that's the wrong thing to say. No, I don't need to ask you anything, Moshe. I'm good. I learned it all. V'nishtak chumimenu shlosh meyos halachos. Forgets 300 halachos. Noldulo sheva meyos tfeikos. 700 uncertainties develop for him. V'amdu kol Yisrael lahargo. And everybody wants to kill him. Right, you blew it. You could have asked him anything. So Amar Rabbi Avo says, Afa pichein hechziron Asniel ben Knaz mitoch pilpulo. Asniel ben Knaz restored that which had been forgotten by his own analysis, his own brilliance. Shneamar ve'el kedah Asniel ben Knaz v'chikalev. That's Kiryat Sefer. Is recapturing that which had been forgotten. So Kiryat Sefer is a non-literal name. Yeah.
Who forgot it? Kalev forgot it because of his
no. Yoshua forgot it, and now Kalev hires someone to get it
because of his. If we can say that about Yoshua, arrogance of saying I know it all. I don't need Moshe's help.
Whatever that means. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's interesting because Rashi says here that he captures it. I didn't bring it here, but Rashi says that he captured it b'nevuah, with prophecy, not with brilliance. And the Maariv Chiyus gets very angry because a navi is not allowed to create new Torah via his prophecy. This has to come through learning, not through prophecy. But now I understand more how Kalev can offer his daughter. It's again he's looking for a Talmid Chacham, and then. The request for water. So the Gemara rewrites the story in source number 14. My vatitznach, what is this vatitznach? She jumped off the donkey. What is that about? So Amar Rava, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. Amar lo, she said to him, Ma chamor zeh, just like a donkey, kevan she'en lo ma'achal be'evuso, when there's no food in the trough, miyad tzoeg, it cries out. So she says, you know, the pantry's empty. I'm responsible. I have to feed the family. What am I going to do? Vatomer, so she said, Tanali bracha, kiaras hanegev nesatani. Give me a bracha, literally blessing, gift, because you have given me dry land. Meaning, bayit shemenu gav mikol tova, a house that is dried up of all good. Vinasatali gulos mayim, Now, the way that it's read here is not, give me springs of water, but rather, you have given me springs of water. Adam she'ebo ala Torah bilvad. You gave me somebody who is only a person of Torah, because we compare Torah to water all the time. So so you have given me someone who is only Torah, and therefore we have no food.
This is not just speaking to her father.
Yes. And so Kalev gives her gulot aliyot, gulot tachtiyot, upper and lower springs. Amar la, he said to her, Misha dar elyonim v'tachtonim yivakesh mimenu mizonot. That which dwells in the upper and lower realms, let him seek food from it. In other words, let him seek food from God.
Your husband?
Yes. Or Rabbeinu Gershom has a different read. Rabbeinu Gershom reads it as, your husband dwells in upper and lower realms, and you also want him to provide food. You know, isn't he already providing Torah? What more do you want from him? It's not his fault. We rewrite the entire story around the idea that Othniel ben Kenaz is a Talmid Chacham, and that this is all about a spiritual conquest. And then we come back to Achsa and her beauty. Take a look at Tosfos in source number 15. On that line about people, you know, about her causing some kind of anger in marriages, Yesh Mefarshim, some say, Delekach Nikres Achsa, that this is why she was called Achsa. Shekol Haroa Osa Koes Al Ishto, that anyone who saw her grew angry at his wife, like we said. Vizel Vade Mishum Sniyus Yesera Dekachazuba, that was because of the great Sniyut that people saw in her. The fact that she was very private about things, that's what everybody admired, and then they would look at their wife and they would say, well, you know, Achsa does this better. I still don't feel so comfortable with that, but that's the answer here. And so he thought, between my merit and her merit, she's going to end up with a good husband, because she's this wonderful tsinua person. She is tsinua. And the last point that this relates to is the business of Ya'avetz, which I had in the table, but I obviously have not yet explained. It's based on the psukim in sources 16 and 17. So we need to see the psukim, and then we can see what the Gemara does with them. Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Perek Bet, says, Umishpachot Sofrim Yoshvei Ya'abetz, the families of Sofrim, scholars, dwellers of Ya'abetz, Tiratim, Shmatim, Suchatim, which Rashi that I brought you here says are just family names. They are called Tiratites, whatever, Shematites, Suchatites. Hema Hakinim Habaim Mechamas Avi Beis Rechav. So these are the Kinim, Rashi says, Sorfim. They were smiths that we're talking about. Those are the people who dwelled in Ya'abetz. So the families of scholars, dwellers of Ya'abetz, were this family, and this family, and they were smiths. So far, so good? So we have Sofrim living there, and we have smiths there. Now, take a look at 17. Here is the key. In 16, we talked about what location? Ya'abetz, right? Yoshvei Ya'abetz. So here we find Ya'abetz again. Vayi Ya'abetz nechbad me'achav. The Ya'abetz was more honored than his brother. V'imo karashimo Ya'abetz le'mor ki'aladati ba'otzev. His mother called him Ya'abetz, saying that my labor was difficult. V'yikra Ya'abetz le'lokei Yisrael le'mor. Imparech tevaracheni v'irbisa es gvuli. He says, God, if you'll give me a bracha, if you expand my boundaries, v'yisa yadcha imi, your hand will be with me. V'asisa me'ra'a le'vilti otzbi. Do something good for me. It's unclear what he's asking for, but don't make me upset. And Hashem satisfied whatever this request was. But I don't know what he asked for. So flip the page. Last source. Still back in Marin Tamura. Tana. Who Othniel, who Ya'abetz? Lo and behold, Othniel is not Devir and Kiryat Sefer are not the only ones going by multiple names. Othniel is Ya'abetz, Umashmo, and what's his real name? Yehuda Achi Shimon Shmo. Yehuda, brother of Shimon. That's not nearly as dramatic. This is his name. His name is, he goes by all of these. How does he get all these names then? Othniel, Sha'ana Okel. God answered him. That's where we get the name Othniel. Ya'abetz, Sheya'at v'ribetz Torah b'Yisrael, because he counseled and rebates. The libotz means different things in different contexts. Here I have to believe it means to encourage the growth of something. He encouraged the growth of Torah in Israel. Umanal and Sha'ana Okel, how do you know that God answered him? Dichsiv, because the Pasuk says, he called out, like that last Pasuk we read, he called out to God and God answered him. What did he ask for? So now they take it phrase by phrase. Imbarech tvaracheni, if you, God, will bless me, meaning with Torah. V'hir besa, v'hirbisa as gebuli, and you expand my boundary, b'talmidim, with students. V'haisa yadcha imi imadi, and your hand will be with me, meaning shelo yishakach talmudi milibi, that I don't forget my learning. V'asa meira'asi, she is dominantly re'im kamosi, that I get re'im like myself. I have to get colleagues like myself. Yeah, exactly. He wants students and he wants chavrusas. Levilti otzbi, not that I should not be made upset or that I should not suffer harm, but rather shelo yisagveni yetzer hara milishnos, that the yetzer hara not keep me from studying. That's what I want. I don't want distractions. Imata osekein, if you'll do all that for me, mutav, great. Vim lav, and if not, hareini holech linisisi lishol, I will descend to the depths. He says I won't be able to survive. Miyad, and then immediately, vayavei Elokim esesher sha'al, Hashem gave him what he asked for. So this whole story that the Gemara in Tzemura reads into this is all based on the idea that it is a spiritual activity, not a physical activity. Now, Othniel ben Kenaz becomes a shofet. We find out in Shoftim, in the third parak in Shoftim. That can actually fit either one. You had Shoftim who were great warriors, and you had Shoftim who were known for their righteousness, like speaking to God, Devorah the Nebiyah, that kind of thing. Maybe some played multiple roles. But Othniel could be a shofet and be a physical conqueror, could be a shofet and be a spiritual leader and a scholar. Either way, it was actually really nice when I thought we were going to do this on Hanukkah, because you have the military victory and you have the oil. So you have the two sides there as well. But that's what seems to be happening here.
Is it appropriate that Othniel's request of Hashem, that he's being so strong, that spiritual request?
Right, I think that's the answer. In the same way that Yaakov can say, if you'll give me this and you'll give me that, and the whole thing, Ramban says that the mitzvah of davening is to believe that Hashem will provide for whatever it is that you need. It's emunah. So that's what he's demonstrating. He's turning to God for it. Yeah.
He's thinking, if not, I'm gonna go to Sheol. I'm gonna go to the grave.
Well, he says, I need this. My survival depends on it. Yeah. That's the way I read it. Okay. Good.
Wow.
Yes, that was fun to put together.
Yeah. So overall, we look at it favorably, at what Evan did with his daughter and with his son-in-law. And
so it seems like, if you take the first view, then it's either foolish or emunah, right? Which is true for many things in life. Right? If you take it as scholarly, then it's approved of. There is, as I said, there is that version in Medrash Rabbah that says that he actually was asking inappropriately and that God chose not to call him on it.
And that's what the 3 years, but the Medrash Rabbah has four.
The Medrash Rabbah has four, correct. All right, so we pick up with this, God willing, in 2 weeks, maybe. In 2 or 3 weeks. In 2 weeks in Ori's house, or 3 weeks back here. It all depends.